This podcast replay is brought to you by HialeahParkCasino.com, your entertainment destination. Casino, poker, dining, and simulcast racing so you can wager on some of the best tracks in the country. Go to HialeahParkCasino.com to sign up for promotions, giveaways, and events.
All right, baby, let's start off our number two in a first-class fashion with Miami Dolphins fullback Alec Ingold, kind enough to join us now on the show. Alec, good afternoon, my friend. How are you doing, sir?
What the heck is up, dude? It's, what is it, Thursday?
Yes,
middle of March.
Is. Yep.
Off-season program has not started yet, but the boys are ready to roll. What an off-season. It's been fun. It's been fun to follow.
You know, Alec, I'm glad you started with that because I'm so pissed, right? Because, I think your season was just about injuries. If you guys stayed healthy, look, I know you're going to have some injuries. It's the most brutal game in the world outside of hockey. You know, it's hard to stay healthy. So I get you're going to have some injuries. But the injuries were just ridiculous this year, right? And it just got to a point where it really derailed the season. And yet you guys almost beat the Bills in the playoffs. And so then I got all these media members, right? And I've been, I'm a member of the media for the last 33 years. But I got all these people spewing all this negative crap all over the place. And to me, I've told the Dolphin Nation, I'm even more excited about this season because you guys should have been better last year. And now you're adding more pieces to the puzzle. You're going to get more guys back. You'll get Trill back. You'll get Nick Needham back. You're going to get guys back that are actually going to help you that were injured last year. You're going to be deeper. You know, Austin Jackson, Liam Eikenberg haven't had, injury-riddled careers yet last year, dude. It's just they didn't get a chance to grow. So, for me, I'm really psyched about this season. So, I feel what you guys are feeling. And I hope that the rest of the Dolphin Nation is feeling this because I'm convinced, and I haven't been this way in over two decades, Alec, you guys are headed in the right direction now, finally.
That's a long-winded intro to a big season, I feel like. But you're spot on. And I think injuries obviously play a part. There were a lot of guys that could have done, a lot more. But at the end of the day, I think in the locker room too, there wasn't very much moral victories either. I know that a lot of guys that were healthy throughout the season that wanted to win ball games, we know that there's an accountability to this thing too. We left plays out there as players. And I think that's what's cool is you kind of benefit from both sides. You want to improve on both ways, right? We weren't good enough and all of these things were handcuffing us. Sure, cool. Other people can talk about that. But we're just going to focus on how we can continue to be better and keep giving ourselves chances to win ball games.
I'm with you there. And by the way, just to have a little fun here, your Twitter account is AI, obviously, Alec Ingold, _. And then you've got the Roman numerals 45, right? So Duke Riley has 45. So I'm just wondering, were there ever any negotiations when you first got here? Because obviously 45 is important to you because you've kept it on your Twitter handle. That's not what you're wearing on the field right now. So I'm wondering, any negotiations with Duke Riley for 45?
Yeah, it was one of those first things. 45 is normally a pretty available number. You know what I'm saying? You're not going many places where there's a 45. And so, I had a mutual connection with Duke. One of my boys from LSU roomed with him. So what's up, Duke? What's up, man? Breaking bread, whatever, having conversation. He's like, yeah, 45 is my number. It's like, all right, you respect it. You left it there. Leave it alone. And I think it was time for a little blank slate. And I'm not doing Roman numerals for 30 either. So if you got any ideas about that, we're not going there. I was number 45 for 7 years of my life. And that's when any recommendation for rookies, don't put numbers in logos. Don't put numbers in Twitter handles, whatever, because it's just going to change. And then we're going to have this conversation. And then Roman numerals were cool and now it's not. And it's a whole deal. It's a whole thing.
It's like don't tattoo your boyfriend or girlfriend's name on you, right?
Just
100%. Just don't do that.
It's forever. Twitter handles are forever, just like tattoos.
Exactly. Yeah, that's it, bro. So I was wondering about that 45. I was going, damn, dude. He had to have some kind of negotiations going on there. So explain to us how Alec Ingold evolved into a fullback. Take us back. Take us back.
Yeah, we're going to take a stroll all the way back to the high school days, playing quarterback. One of the biggest kids on the football field in Green Bay, Wisconsin, It's not the biggest hotbed of, it's not American Heritage. It's not St. Thomas Aquinas. You know, it's Bayport High School. But we
damn,
we
a year in, a year in, and you learn quickly. Damn.
Yeah. Hey, you got a house down here. All of a sudden, you start following Friday Night Lights.
Okay.
No, but that was kind of, I had an offer, mid-major, NIU. Okay, you could do that. You could go that route. Or really late offer at Wisconsin as an athlete. And we're just going to figure it out. So to be able to kind of take that leap of faith and, like, go with the big dogs, go in that dream offer and put that pride to the side of quarterback and just now it's serve the team, find a way onto the football field, figure out what you're good at, and show up and trust some coaches. So I think that was a decision I made when I was 18 years old. And that goes from quarterback to linebacker to running back to fullback. And it was just that mindset of, man, I'm going to make sure these guys find a spot for me on the field and I'm going to play. And it doesn't really matter what position. Football is football. I love playing it. And that's how you kind of become a fullback nowadays, I guess.
No, I got you. Do you still throw the ball around?
I love to throw the ball. So the broken thumb on the right hand from this last year, uh-huh. I broke it on Christmas. It's been a little hindering on the whole quarterback thing. You know, I can't warm up the old gunslinger anymore.
I got you.
We're still in rehab protocols.
So that's why they signed Mike White. You were going to take that spot, but they said, you know, the thumb wasn't working. So they gave it to Mike White. Is that what happened?
Yeah, it was an insurance thing. I get it. It's whatever. It's fine. I'm working on my Madden reads on Cover 2 and Cover 4 now. So, and that also doubles as the thumb exercises. So, I'm still working.
All right. You got to get it because, you know, we got to have, you know, a fullback option one day. You know, I can see Tua tossing it to you and then you're rolling and they think you're going to run. You're running with it and you just throw it to Tyreek or Waddle for a touchdown. Okay. You know what I'm saying?
I like it.
I can see
that. What personnel are we going to be in? Is this going to be a goal line personnel or is this like normal down and distance?
No, we're going to fool them completely. We're going to think they're going to make them think goal line completely at that moment. And you're just going to psych them out, dude.
I love it.
Okay.
I love it.
That's it, bro. Rob Hunt will follow with you down the right side. You are a right-handed quarterback, correct?
I'm a right-handed quarterback. What if Rob Hunt actually plays center and they don't know where the ball is, but it was, yeah, I think maybe you put out the punter or the kicker out there too just to really, you know, he's out at wide receiver. Is he going to punt the ball right now on third down? Who knows?
Okay.
It's going to be the wildest of wild card plays.
I love it. I love it. I got to ask you also – When you talk about your book, The Seven Crucibles, and it obviously you're an inspirational person, and I've followed some of the interviews that you've done, and this kind of came from your injury, your knee injury, is kind of where you're in that dark place, and you found a way to find a positive out of it, and you know. I relate a lot to that because one of my sayings that I have to everybody is that success is fed off of failure. Mm. And to me, that's how it is, right? I mean, Michael Jordan got cut from his junior high team. You know what I'm saying? We fall off the bike and we got to get back on again. You know, it's everything's about failure. You know, you start writing for the first time and it's not even legible, you know, but then you practice and then it becomes legible. You know, life is all about failure and then coming back from it or having setbacks in life. It really all depends on how you look at it and how you attack it. You know what I mean? Either you want to go down that negative hole or you want to say, okay, how do I overcome? And that's one of the beauties of what you have written about with the Seven Crucibles.
I appreciate that, man. Yeah, I think there's a lot of moments in your life where you really get introduced to yourself all over again. You have some awareness of what your priorities are, what your routine is, what your habits are. And it's like when you get something stripped away from you, when it's an ACL, when it's becoming undrafted, when it's whatever you're dealing with, I think, you know, a late scholarship offer, you could run down the list. Those pieces of adversity, you really understand like, dang, like this is how bad I want it. This is what I'm willing to go through. This is how I'm going to adjust. This is how I'm going to figure out my priorities. This is how I'm going to reschedule things so that all of those no's can eventually turn into yeses. Those failures can turn into successes. And I think that process and how you go about it is so much more important on your approach rather than the results of it. Like I'm going to write down big goals. I'm going to write down crazy goals. I'm going to write down scary goals. And I'm going to figure out a way to get any possible inch closer to that. Right. And you're just going to keep going down that, that, that lane and that path until you become the best version of yourself. And I think that's really the whole main premise of that book. And when you have a torn ACL and you can't walk, you can't play, and then, you know, a GM comes in, brings you in an office and says, you know, we don't need you anymore. You know, that's where, all right, how am I going to adjust? How am I going to react? How am I going to take these external circumstances that aren't ideal and make it into exactly what it was meant to be? And I feel like that's kind of that fight that everyone goes through.
You know, I've had the same kind of, you know, experiences being in radio for 33 years. It's a terrible business and you have your ups and downs. And for me, one of the things that I find is that I can't feed negativity. I will not feed negativity, because if I feed negativity, it's just going to lead me somewhere where I'm not going to be in a good place. And I remembered when at one time I was at a one station and they had this thing, they brought this new general manager in and he had this thing about how he wanted to style the format, this, that, whatever. And he basically told me, yeah, we're going to go with athletes only on air and not traditional broadcasters. And we're going to move you to nights. And I had like, you know, 12 sponsors. And I'm like, well, what happens with my sponsors? You know, and all that. And he was like, well, don't worry. We will move some of them around. And I said, you know, I said, no, this is not going to work. And I left and I went to another station that nobody listens to. But the following went with me. I had a great time, and I wasn't willing to be put in the corner that they wanted to put me in. You know what I mean? And then when I went to that place, it went chapter 11 4 years later. And then I found myself back to where I left because they wanted me back, because they realized that they kind of needed me. You know what I'm saying? So for me, what I'm asking you now is, I refuse to give in to negativity. When something bad happens to me, okay, I immediately turn to how do I change this right away? Because I'm not going to feel like this. So what do you do? Because I know what I do, because I refuse to give in to it. So when you had that knee injury, when you've had other setbacks that maybe you can talk about, what is that motivating factor for you? Because my motivating factor is, screw you. You're not getting me negativity. That's kind of the way I am about it.
Yeah, I think the first step is really understanding those intrusive thoughts, those negative emotions. It happens to everybody. So like embracing that, understanding that, like realizing that it's real. Like it is what it is. The second step is understanding that you control your thought after the thought. You control how you think about that original intrusive thought, which is what you're saying, right? You're going to go, listen, I feel that. I hear it. That's what happened. Here's how I can flip it. And that's a fight. And that's a muscle. That's something that doesn't get any easier as you go down that road. Like it's hard to fight to stay positive every single day of your life. Like it's impossible.
I know.
But if you build some habits, you build some standards about yourself, then you're able to stand on something. You're able to draw a line in the sand, know what you stand for, because something matters that much to you. And I feel like the final piece on execution and really like following through on eliminating those intrusive thoughts, controlling your thought after the thought, is really just being able to be yourself, to be able to bring life to it, to be able to take actionable steps. And like, you feel a certain way, but man, your standard, your priorities, your habits, your routine, it doesn't really matter. It doesn't matter how you feel about it. Like show up and do the work anyways. Nobody cares. Work harder. Be better.
Right.
You know, like don't take offense to it. Don't take it personally. Taking something personally about going undrafted and 32 general managers and head coaches not saying you're good enough, is that on them or is that on me?
Right.
Like let's just take it for what it is. Let's not let those intrusive thoughts in. And then let's go be better. Cause at the end of the day, you're not good enough right now.
Right.
And that's a similar thing on the ACL is like, man, you can have all the negative thoughts in the world. I'm going to control my thought after the thought. I'm going to stay positive. I'm going to set a goal. I'm going to be a better fullback after this injury than before. That's what I said I was going to do. And now let's stand on it. Let's be about it. So I feel like that's kind of my process.
And I think one of the things that's also really important for all of us, and it doesn't always happen, we got to believe in ourselves first and foremost, okay? If we don't believe in ourselves, then you're going to have a hard time convincing anybody else, you know, to believe in you. But when somebody does believe in you, it's obviously an incredible lift. You're in the rehab process coming off that injury, and Chris Greer picks up the phone and, you know, reaches out to you guys to bring you in. That says a lot about the general manager, and that says a lot to you as a person that they believe in you even when you're not at your best at this moment.
Yeah, I think that's something where you have a phone call with general manager, a head coach, an offensive coordinator, running back coach, and they're all on the same page. Like, there's all alignment there. There's a vision for your role. There's a vision for how you can improve. There's a vision for your skill set, how we can use you in the offense. Like, dude, that's all I needed to hear. You know, it's the external circumstances, that external validation. Like, it's there and it feels good and it's motivating, but it's not forever. Like, that can get you so far. And then the rest of it is on you, believing in yourself, like you said, first and foremost. Like, that conviction, that comes from within inside. And if you have that environment around you, that support system, those people that are willing to invest in you and support you and, you know, do the right things to be able to help you be the best version of yourself, man, then it's a wrap. Then it's just a matter of time. It's a matter of time before, you know, things start clicking, the momentum starts building. It's that flywheel. Like, man, we're going to push this thing up the hill and it's going to be tough. But that momentum starts to build and things just start flowing. And then you're able to put together a season and a career that you're proud of.
Alec Ingold, fullback for the Miami Dolphins, joining us. Follow him on Twitter at AI_XLV. All right. So I got to say, and again, you obviously have, since you're writing that book, since, you know, kind of analyzing the depths of darkness at times that we all go through, Foster Moreau just got some, you know, disappointing news, unfortunately, and that he has lymphoma. And he, I love the way he responded that, you know, hey, basically I'm going to go kick cancer's ass. And here you are retweeting it. And so, you know, I thought that was really cool too, that you are on board with somebody else and helping them, you know, mentally. Like, hey, I'm on your bandwagon now. I'm going to help you at the same time emotionally fight this thing. I thought that was cool on your part.
Man, Foster and I, we roomed in a Hampton Inn & Suites in Alameda, California for 4 months straight. So we became very close as rookies in that draft class, so undrafted class. And, you know, he's going to be in my wedding. He's going to be, you know, we're really tight. And those are the type of brotherhood moments, the hours that you put in together, the sacrifice, the preparation phase, that's what makes locker room so special. That's what makes coach and player relationships so special, is because of all that time behind closed doors where you are going all in on something, where you believe on the same thing, the same vision, and whether you're going to succeed or fail, man, you're going to put everything you have into it. And that's the type of dude Foster is. That's the type of guy that I try to learn from, get inspired with. You know, I'm actually older than him, right? But like, I learned so much from that man and how he approached things. I have no doubt that he's gonna do what he says, kick cancer's ass. But man, that was a tough phone call to get from him.
I can imagine,
because you go so far with people, right? And you build so many great relationships in this business, and to have that stripped away from him for the foreseeable future because he's gonna be fighting his own body, man, that's crazy. But you know what type of man he is, you know how he's gonna approach it, and it's there's not a doubt in my mind he's going all in on that thing, and he's gonna be back. So in whatever facet he determines, you know, it's gonna be on his circumstance, that's for sure.
Awareness is something that is so important in life, and obviously you have written a book on having the awareness of, hey, listen, we all go through tough times and how you fight through it. Have you found yourself to be a little bit more of a motivator, a guy that's trying to help people like Moreau in these tough moments where you reach out and pick up the phone? Have you done it? Maybe you don't have to say who the player is. Last year during the Dolphin season, maybe there was one of your teammates that you reached out for. Has that been a part of your life now too? Because obviously, as an adopted child, you know what it's like, how important it is to have support from different people, not just the people that you directly live with.
Yeah, that's an interesting thought. And it's something where I think leadership comes from all the little things, all the little details, right? And being a leader, being a motivator, you know, that title can mean so many different things to so many different people. I think if you're yourself, which I think Coach McDaniel is himself genuinely 100% through, he's able to lead a group of men because he is who he is and he stands on what he stands on. And when you're able to follow suit with something like that, you're able to go into the cold tubs. You're able to go into a practice facility. You're able to go in a weight room and be yourself. And that gives you the courage, that confidence, that conviction to have those little conversations when y'all are sending it, when y'all are dog tired during a conditioning test, during quarters that we have during training camp, and it's 99 degrees and 99% humidity out there. And those little conversations with people that end up building a culture, that end up building an identity for a team. Like that's the thing. So, I mean, you talk about having one phone call or whatever, man, it's a million during the day. It's every interaction. You got to be you all the time. And if people can hold each other accountable to that, you notice when people are off, you know what to say, you know how to say it, you know how to bring them along when they're not feeling it. Right. And I feel like that's where there's a lot of power in a team culture and a team identity that's built on being yourself, being real, and then holding each other accountable to a standard that you guys set together.
So let me ask you, you've gone through the experience of being an adopted child, and I heard you say you're going to get married. This is pure ignorance. I don't know. Are you going to adopt or have you adopted? Do you plan on doing that, or do you plan on going through that experience yourself since you lived it?
I lived it and I saw how impactful it was. And to be, a spokesperson for the foster care system for, kids that have been adopted, looking to be adopted, parents that are looking to adopt, it is really cool to see that. And I think the number one thing is just having that communication. And so my fiance and I, we're going to have those talks and we're going to figure out, but it's like having a plan and being able to execute it is the biggest thing when you think about adoption. Is like, can we support this? How are we going to support this kid? Is it going to be, are we going to look for kids that have been in the system for a decade? Because there's so many kids that are at risk of aging out. Are we going to take that leap of faith? Do you look at, a million different options? So having open, honest communication, I think that's something that my parents did that was amazing, was that they were able to talk everything out through me. Nothing was a secret, right? And I feel like if you go through that process that way, open and honestly, as a family, man, I think that's what's some of the most exciting parts of getting married this summer and having those conversations and changing lives together. It's going to be really fun.
What did it mean to you to win the award, the CCAI 2022 National Angel in Adoption Award?
Awards are a funny thing, man. Like we've talked about this a number of times, like already the external validation, because it is motivating. It lets you know that you're on the right path, that you're supporting people, but it's like not why you do it. Right. So I think it is really cool to have, congressional awards like that for organizations to support and acknowledge people doing the right things. And then to go to those events, to meet people, to network with them. Right. And to be able to be like, okay, this is what they're doing out in Nebraska. This is what they're doing up in Boston. This is what they're doing down in Florida or in Nevada. And it's like, you get to learn and share and break bread and communicate on all these great ideas, so that you can just help your community, your little corner of the world, that much better.
Yeah, listen, all the awards are great, but if you reach one kid, that's the ultimate satisfaction there. I mean, if you're able to do that. But by the way, in Suameco, you probably reached a lot of the elementary kids with all those dance moves of yours.
That was, man, I was put on a tough spot there. We're back at the elementary school, third grade teacher. We're doing the Tootsie Roll. That's what I did when I was 8 years old. And she's like, oh, do you remember? Oh, we're going to dance like right now. All these cameras are here, whatever. We're going to catch that. Great. Perfect. Love that. Love it. I really appreciate that, Miss Michael. So
did Mike Kosicki reach out and try to steal that move from you for next year?
I don't think anyone's going to reach out about stealing any of that. It was terrible. It was the worst thing ever. My little sister's a dancer, like world-class dancer. And she was embarrassed to be associated with that.
I love it. I love it. All right. So let me ask you a couple fullback questions.
Yep.
Walk us through now, since we don't play the game at your level, man. Some of us might have played at a much lower level, all those things. So walk us through Alec Ingold's responsibilities on a regular running play when he breaks the huddle. Talk to us the checklist that you're going through at that moment.
Yeah. You can go all the way to Pop Warner. Like, what's it on and who am I hitting? right? That's what I was told in Pop Warner at like 5 years old. So, I mean, those are the fundamentals that you carry with for forever. So, yeah, when we're breaking the huddle, it's like a lot of eye discipline, knowing where to put your eyes. And then defensive guys, they're getting smart. So they know, okay, if he's looking at me, he might come and block me. So right. Then sometimes you have to look the wrong way. Sometimes you have to look the right way. You know, however you have to scan the defense, make sure you're playing the game within the game. And then it's, you know, honestly, it's just knowing your assignment, knowing what these different defensive adjustments, when safeties are rolling, when all of a sudden linemen are moving, when linebackers are making different calls and you're hearing things, it's like, okay, this adjustment might happen, that adjustment might happen. So this is pre-snap, you know, I don't even know if it's recognition more so than like you're getting prepared for all of the different things that could happen post-snap. You're getting prepared for it. And then, man, once it post-snap as a fullback, a million different things can happen in front of you with, you know, different assignments, different guys moving different places. So you have to go no hesitation, go clean somebody up, right? Like you can't, the last thing I'm going to do is stay in Raheem's way because he's way faster than I am. It's not even close. I don't even want to know what a race would look like. So I got to get out of his way and I got to make sure that I'm getting a hat on my assignment. And however we're going to do that, we're going to do it a million miles an hour. We're going to do it with great, great technique. We're going to be aggressive and make it a track meet and just get out of Raheem's way so he can bust a big run. That's my job.
Well, on your Twitter profile, you got this big old thing on the top that says Hitman. So is there anything more satisfying for you than a great block? Because that kind of that's what I get from that. It's like, yeah, I love my job, and when I make contact with somebody and put them on their ass, that's when I'm happiest. So talk to me about the perfect block. Is that the ecstasy in football for you?
Yeah, I think same foot, same shoulder, getting low pad, like low man wins, right? You got your forehead on another guy's chin, and you're running through squared up. It's unbelievable because it can make a loud sound, or it could be like either a huge block or not a huge block, go down to the ground, whatever. But when you hit exactly technique, exactly how it's supposed to be, it feels like you're just hitting paper, like you're just running through it. And it's like one of the best feelings ever. It's like the sweet spot on a Louisville slugger. And it's a great feeling to have. And it's even better when you know you're at the point of contact, the ball's coming right behind you, and that's going to be the difference between an explosive run or second and six. I feel like those are the little inches, those little details, those little moments that you got to live for as a fullback.
Yeah, and by the way, there's a lot of people that wanted me to ask you about Matt Milano. I think they want you to make sure you put a good block on Matt Milano the next time around.
Okay, I got that. Yeah, I'll any of those Bills. I apologize to the mic'd up crew on the Buffalo Bills game when I was mic'd up because that is – I don't know what happened. I talked a lot more in that game on those clips than ever before, ever, 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 ever. So I apologize for all that for the Dolphins fans out there. That's not how I normally play ball.
Oh, that is awesome. All right, so tell me a little bit about McDaniel and this offense. What is it about? What are you expecting from this offense this year? Because, you know, here's another thing that I think of, you know, again, I'm not going into the abyss, my brother. I'm not doing that. Can you imagine if he gets the tight end to where he needs it to be, because he wants an active tight end, that pass catching, blocking, all that stuff? They didn't really have that feature in this offense last year. And then in the running game, there were times you guys were running, and then there were times, you know, it was a little inconsistent. If this offense gets the tight end that he's looking for, okay, and gets the play and the running game, although there were times, I got to tell you, you were gouging the Bills for 7 yards a carry. You were gouging the Green Bay Packers for 9 yards a carry. God, I wish you would have kept running because you were knocking them on their asses. But if this running game really gets going and the tight end becomes a bigger factor in the offense, dude, you guys are going to be scary as hell. Like scary.
Yeah, when you talk expectations as an offense, I feel like that's a – it's a scary word because you almost don't want to put a box around it.
Right.
Right. You don't want to define who you're going to be or what roles are going to be played or who is able to win games here or there. Like you want a bunch of closers on your team, whether it's running the ball, throwing the ball, you know, explosive plays, methodical plays. Like you want to be able to win a million different ways and to be able to have a cold weather game, rainy weather game, a beautiful, sunny South Florida game, and be able to be competitive, move the ball, and score touchdowns and make plays, right? So as an offense, I feel like a lot of guys in the second year, it's going to be supreme ownership of your role, of carving that thing out, owning every part of it, and being able to be ready for when your number's called, because there's so many guys on the offense that can play ball. Mm-hmm. Like, be consistent, you know, maintain that level of discipline and be ready for that shot when you got it, because there's going to be a different game. I'm sorry, my dogs are all excited.
You're good. I got four at home, bro. You're good. I'm a dog guy, yeah, so you're good.
He's saying that expectations are scary and that we should all be ready to make some plays on offense, like all 11 guys. I don't care. Rob Hunt might take the ball and score another touchdown. I don't know.
That actually would be pretty damn cool, actually. That would be a good thing. All right, so two quick things before I let you go. Alec Ingold Foundation, how can we help out? Tell the folks out there.
AlecIngold.com is where you're going to find everything. Foundation, book, mindset coaching, you know, speaking, whatever it is. And for the foundation, we're trying to put some stuff together in South Florida, football camp for kids in adoption, foster care. So just stay in tune, stay connected. Go to that website, follow up for that, like a little weekly email newsletter we have going on, so that you can find a way to get involved, whether you want to volunteer, whether you want to donate. It's all there at alecingold.com/foundation.
Okay. Two, what kind of music you like?
I'm a big hip hop guy. J. Cole is one of my guys.
My daughter loves J. Cole. All right. Do you like any kind of regular music, pop music, any other type of music?
So I got a little vinyl record player here. We got the Eagles. We got,
classic rock.
Yeah, we got some throwback stuff here.
Okay. Temptations. So you're an inspirational guy. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Have you ever heard of the music that's called ska? Ska music?
Ska. No,
ska
I haven't.
Ska is like a mix of reggae, punk, and rock. Okay. And so there's a band called The Interrupters. All right. I want you to check out The Interrupters, check out some of their lyrics, fantastic lyrics. Take Back the Power, Title Holder, A Friend Like Me. I just want you to listen. It's great music, actually.
Yeah.
They're fantastic. But the lyrics, a lot of their lyrics are very inspirational. Okay. So it's actually a pretty cool, I love the band. They're fantastic. But their lyrics kind of reminds me a lot of you. And I think, you know, with the book, The Seven Crucibles, which, by the way, why don't you tell people where they can get the book too, by the way?
You can get it on Amazon or alecingold.com. So that'll all be right there for you. Amazon's like 2 days. Like if you're listening to this right now, it might show up tomorrow morning. Who knows? So it's pretty impressive. And then I'm going to go hit up these interrupters.
The Interrupters. Yes.
The Interrupters. I'm going to listen to that.
Yes. And I Gave You Everything is my favorite song of theirs. But check it out. You'll like it, man. I appreciate you. And thank you for your time, Alec. Look forward to seeing you in the locker room. Or who knows, maybe we'll bother you during training camp.
Love that.
All right,
sounds good.
Man.
Thanks for the time, man.
Thank you. Appreciate you. There you go. Alec Ingold, man. Good stuff, man. Good stuff. Good interview with the fullback of your Miami Dolphins. Really enjoyed that interview. Hope you guys enjoyed that interview. There we go. What do we got? Thumbs up, thumbs down. What do we got? Where are we going? And by the way, hit the like button while we're at it there. I mean, there's not a lot of likes there, man, compared to what you got out there. So, Big O, I have a five-hour drive. Timed it to drive with the Big O show. You know we're not on for 5 hours. I've done it. We have done a five-hour show, actually, a couple times. We have done that, but I don't think today will be that day that we do a five-hour show. I can tell you that. Oh, lordy, lordy, lordy. By the way, Sloman's Home Shield. Yes, sir. We love the people at Sloman's. There is Alarmo. He's ready to go. Are you looking for an alarm? We're in 14 different states, folks, and we can give you a free doorbell camera right now. That's right, a free doorbell camera. All you got to do is go 1-800-ALARM-ME. Tell them that you heard it on the Big O radio show, and they will take care of you. They've been taking care of Americans for 100 years. This is a company that's been around a long time, man. So 1-800-ALARM-ME, and that doorbell camera is a savior. You'll know everybody that's coming to your house. And if you're, you know, watching television, somebody rings the doorbell, you can look at your camera and see who's there and say, yeah, I don't feel like answering it. I'm too into my show. Let them knock and they'll go away. That kind of stuff, because maybe they're selling something or some crap like that. You don't want to deal with it. The doorbell camera is amazing. Plus, when you use our professional installation and our low-cost central station monitoring, you're going to get an LED touchscreen pad, a motion detector, three-arm doors, and a backup battery. 1-800-ALARM-ME. And for those of you that live in some cold states that we're at, like California, Connecticut, New Jersey, New York, Maryland, Virginia, Georgia, how about some heating oil? You know what you pay every month, right? We have fixed rates for you. We can save you on that. 1-866-OIL-DEAL. That's 1-866-OIL-DEAL. Reach out to them at Sloman's. All right. There we go. It looks like everybody likes it. Big O, what's up, everyone? Can't chat much live anymore. New job. Great interview. Oh, thank you, Ian from Brooklyn. Appreciate you. What a personality. For a fullback, says Brett Campbell. Brian Landis giving us the thumbs up. And Daryl and Alexis and Devin and Big D. There we go. Thank you. Bradster said, great interview, Big O. I'm a fan of Ingold, the player now, and I'm a fan of Ingold, the man. Hope you have Alec on again. We will. We will. We will. And Rosendo enjoyed it. There we go. Dave enjoyed it. Thank you all out there. Looks like you all enjoyed it. There you go. Thank you. And he was good. He was good. Steven says, Alec is such a down-to-earth, inspirational dude. Great interview, Big O. Knight, thank you for the love on the Super Chat. Says, you need to tell Madden to bump that speed number. And by the way, there was another one, Matthew Hernandez. You sent in a Super Chat. Thank you, sir. He says, Alec, who seems the hungriest this offseason. Oh, you wanted me to ask him who seems the hungriest. I don't think he would have given you a specific person. He probably would have said, we're all hungry. I'm hungry. But, yeah. I think they're all pumped for this season. I know I am, man. I am super jacked for this season. Super jacked. I keep telling you this. I've been telling you this for a while. And I love what they're adding on this team. I really do. Dougie Fresh says, oh, what an interview. What a human being. Alec has taken on the responsibility of a role model and what's possible for children who are adopted in foster care or in a transition. Applause, applause. Yes, sir. That's a good man. It's a good man. Big O, do you have the connections to get Tua for an interview? I would like to see you tell him to get rid of the damn ball. I'm working on it. It won't be easy. But I'm working on it. I mean, if he's going to do any kind of interviews, you know, should be on our show over practically any show on the planet. Let's be honest. I mean, not for nothing. It's not that we're the greatest show on earth or anything, but we got his damn back, bro. Unlike all these phonies that talk a lot of shit about him and then they want him on. Oh, he can't play. Oh, hi, Tua. How you doing? Oh, he's got no arm. Oh, hi, Tua. How you doing? Oh, he plays too much golf. Oh, hey, Tua. How you doing? Phonies. Brad says, highlight of my day, that interview. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. And we're working on another big name. Hopefully next week, I think, we'll get it done. Big, big name. Top five name on the team. Okay, not going to tell you who, but top five name on the team. Working on that, we'll get it done. We will get it done. And hopefully we'll get other ones done too, you know, and have some fun, okay? Yes, you are the greatest show on radio, Al. That's too kind. Thank you, sir. I appreciate you. Hey, did you see Braxton Berrios and Olivia Cupo split up? You don't know who she is? She's a hottie. She's a hottie. Her sister is with the receiver that Edelman. So the Cupos were like double dating before because the two sisters obviously, and then the two guys, And so apparently Kupo was on social media, and she was with her sister, and they were single sisters or something like that. So Braxton is in Miami and single, ready to mingle. So Braxton will have no shortage of ladies interested in him when he goes out. That's for sure. So, yeah, I saw that. Let's see. What else do we have here? I would like Big O to interview Christian Wilkins. We could get that done. I feel you're going to interview Waddle or Hill. What a thrill. Oh, please post on Reddit that you had Cater and Alec. I can do it for you. And Sean, if you want. Yeah, I have to. It's so many social media things. But I will. I have to post it on there. I will. I'll post them today. Kupo was Danny Amendola? Oh, my bad. Okay, so it was Amendola. Okay, so the other Kupo was Amendola. Okay, my bad. All right. I got my short white receivers confused. Apologies. All short white receivers look the same. Braxton will have all the ladies from Tootsie's. Oh, sent you a DM on IG trying to clarify the question. Oh, okay. Let's see. Let's see what you got. Because we got IG and Twitter DMs. Let's see what you got. All right. Emilio, you said, wait a minute. Maybe that's why. Here it is. Okay. I got you now, Emilio. Hold on. Okay, now let's do it. I want to try to clarify the question. I like getting regarding crypto. Okay, fast forward. We now live in a world where the Fed has created their own centralized digital currency. My employer banks with Chase. Let's say when I get a paycheck, I assume Chase would pay me with Fed's centralized digital currency, but I don't want to receive payment in that currency. I want my money to be in decentralized currency. Do I have to find a new employer, or is the currency capable of being converted? Yes. What you do is you either have your employer pay you in Bitcoin, if they can do that, if they have the capability, or if not, the second you get paid, you convert it right away to Bitcoin. And that's what you would do. And then just keep it on your digitalized wallet, and that's all. So, yes, that's what you would do. If, again, not a financial advisor, but makes a lot of sense. I'd rather have my money in Bitcoin than in cash. That's for sure. I'm going to gain a lot more that way. So, yes, that's what I would do. There are very few businesses that are paying in crypto. Like the city of Miami pays in crypto. They can pay you in Bitcoin, which is actually really, really cool. We're at 28,300, still messing around with 28, which just tells me that it's going to explode any minute now and go over 29 and 30 very shortly. But that's what I would do, Emilio, you know? Instead of having it in U.S. currency, I would just convert it right away to Bitcoin. That's it. Okay? Now, you still want to make your bills in money. So convert your discretionary income into Bitcoin and then use your fiat, which is the money, and pay your, you know, FPNL and pay your mortgage and all that other crap. So pay that with money. Don't pay them with Bitcoin. And then what you have left that you're going to save, you save it on Bitcoin. Don't save it in your bank account with crap money that is not going to grow. So, yeah, that's what I would do. Okay, if I'm you. I kind of do that myself because when I pay myself, I put a portion in Bitcoin and the rest to the wife so she can pay the bills. And so I kind of do that myself anyways. I actually do that all the time. Is Fiat B-Day today? Yeah, since the feds are printing trillions. Yeah. They are. When sports and business collide, We do something called the KSDT CPA Sports Business Report. Thank you out there for tuning in as always. Here's our KSDT CPA Sports Business Report. You see the QR code, right? QR code, it's called. So if you tax season is here, man, you got to do your taxes, personal business. Let's go. Reach out to the people at KSDT, Dade, Broward, Palm Beach counties. Reach out to them. You can do it all by phone pretty much. So call them, reach out. Hell, you could be anywhere in Florida to do your taxes. So just use the QR code there and reach out and tell them that you saw it on the Big O Radio Show. So Forbes took out the value of each team in Major League Baseball. And Sean, you'll never guess who's number one. Nah, there's only one.
Dodgers?
No.
Mets?
No.
Number one.
Yankees.
Sorry, I was thinking, when I said Mets, I meant Yankees. There's too many damn New York teams.
Yankees, whatever. $7.1 billion. Okay, the Dodgers are second. They're 4.8. Like, they're way behind. They're $2.3 billion behind in value. Boston is 4.5. Cubs are 4.1. And San Francisco, 3.7. Those are the top five. Sean, once again, who's the 30th team in value in Major League Baseball? I'll give you one guess.
Is it right down the street from here?
Worth $1 billion, the Miami Marlins.
$1 billion.
The A's are 29th at 1.1.
They ain't got a stadium.
Yeah, yeah. Cincinnati is 28 at 1.1 million and 1.19. Kansas City is 27th at $1.2 billion, and Tampa Bay is 5th at $1.25 billion. With all that winning, they're only worth $250 million more than the Marlins. How ridiculous is that? With all that winning that they do. It's a stadium.
Valuations really aren't about the winning, though, right?
No, but if you have talent on your team, you're worth more.
Yeah, have they really ever had? I mean, I know they get the talent, but once the talent
they leave.
Exceeds, they they draft well because the talent grows up in there, but then they never keep it. So that's
right.
Why they can never
but
grow.
But they still have more than Miami, in that sense. Miami has the stadium.
Yeah.
Which, because that's a public stadium.
Yeah.
So this one's also a public stadium, but it's a brand new stadium, so they have the advantage.
Trouble.
Right. So it's probably worth a little more, but yet it's still worth $250 million less than Tampa, and that stadium's like crap that they have in Tampa.
Yeah.
So then here's the other thing that's pretty funny, okay? Now, I want you to figure this out on your own, okay? Think about this. All right, the rights fees that are paid to teams. You know what the rights fees are for the Yankees? $143 million every year for the rights fees. The local rights fees, okay? So, 882,000 per game they must produce in revenue to just cut even. Now that's the Yankees, and they're on Yes Network. They'll easily surpass that because it's the Yankees. Their name is worldwide, bro. People are watching the Yankees all over the place. The Miami Marlins, okay, they are now getting $49 million a year in rights fees for television. That means they have to sell $302,469 every game just to break even. Is there any chance that they are selling that amount of money per game in revenue? No way, right? There's no way people are buying that money, that revenue. Why? Because there's nobody watching. There's very few people watching. Tons of people watch the Yankees. The Yankees are the number one team in the state of Florida. Don't know if you know that, but they are the number one team in the state of Florida. Baseball. Ahead of Tampa, Miami. Yeah, we have two teams in the state, and they're behind the Yankees. Okay, so they can generate the plus they have Yes Network. So they have a whole network and all that stuff. So it's a lot easier for them to generate that revenue. And by the way, to be fair, I don't care about the Yankees, but I do watch the Yes Network every once in a while. And I got to tell you, their programming is excellent. They do a very good job with their programming. Profiles and interviews and games and past games and all kinds of stuff. Yes Network does a really good job, dude. Really good job. Now, you have a team that has an incredible history that you can lean off of. So there's a lot of things you can do. But wow. I saw the monster difference between the two. And then I'm looking at it going, there's no way. That would be the greatest sales team in the history of mankind if they're cutting a profit on television. If they're generating more than $49 million in sales in a season, God bless them. They are awesome. You better go hire those salespeople at other companies, because those are pretty good salespeople. Because you got barely anything to sell with the Marlins. That, my friends, is your KSDT CPA Sports Business Report.
This has been the KSDT Sports Business Report. KSDT CPA is one of South Florida's largest and one of the country's fastest growing accounting firms. KSDT is recognized by Forbes as one of the top tax and accounting firms for 2022. KSDT CPA is a full service firm that also excels in crypto. Visit online at KSDTCPA.com or call 305-670-3370.
All right. Let's see what we got here. If the Marlins actually competed consistently, people would watch. Yeah, no, if they tried, we would watch. There's no doubt about that. I was surprised my A's aren't well, you win more. You win more. You probably have better attendance overall. That's the thing. The A's and the Rays win more than the Marlins. They don't win anything big. But they, in general, have more winning seasons. They go to the playoffs a lot more than the Marlins. The Marlins win titles. I'll give them that. But, you know.
And they're in playoff contention.
Right,
the Marlins are usually out with 30 games to go, and they're already out of the playoff race.
So yeah, it's even 30 games in.
Possibly.
Not to go. Yeah. 30 games to go, yeah. Shit, 90 games to go, we're usually out of it by then. All right. Let's see. What else do we have to talk about on the show? Mavs. Oh, by the way, Mavs lost last night to the Warriors. Okay. This is funny as hell. I mean, it's funny. It's sad. It's twisted. All these kind of things. Right? So they lost last night. I know there was a terrible call there with the Warriors, and they got an easy basket. And I know Cuban's challenging you, and he probably won't win, whatever. They lost last night to the Warriors, who, by the way, never win on the road, but they beat the Mavs, 127 to 125. Kyrie was out with an injury, you know, because he's so reliable. And not only that, okay, you know that the Mavs are 36 and 37? Do you know that since February 8th, the first day that Kyrie played, whether he's played or not in games, okay? Since the trade, since he took the court for the first time on February 8th, since then till now, yesterday they played without him. They are 7-11 since that trade. 7-11 since the trade. I don't know the exact record because I didn't feel like going through how many of those wins and losses are with Kyrie, right? But it just goes to show you know what I mean? That some players, it doesn't matter, they might put up stats, you know, like Whiteside, but it doesn't necessarily mean that they're winning players. And that's what sometimes people don't understand. And with Kyrie Irving, he's got an incredible skill set, but it doesn't necessarily mean that he's playing constantly winning basketball. And just because he hit a shot, a big shot with Cleveland, and they won the championship, it's still LeBron, the one that was doing all the heavy lifting in the end. And Kyrie, the flake that he is, he'll compliment you, and you hope he compliments you well that day. But it shows you on a consistent basis that Kyrie Irving has never and never will be a leader, should not ever be any kind of pillar of stability in your organization, should not be your franchise player. It's just a guy that's got a lot of ability, but still lacks all the professionalism in the world. And 7-11 shows it right there. They traded on February 6th, Dinwiddie, Dorian Finney-Smith, a 2027 second rounder, a 2029 second rounder, and a 2029 first rounder. They traded depth. They traded draft picks. And they may end up losing this guy at the end of the year because, in the end, do you tie? I mean, if you end up missing the playoffs or this is terrible at the end, why would you want to re-sign him? What would motivate you to re-sign this bum? Seriously, what would motivate you to re-sign bum-ass Kyrie Irving? I'm so sick and tired of talking about his handle and that he can shoot. The guy's a moron, and the guy is not a winner. Just not. You can have him. You can keep him. All of that. Do you believe Fish would compete if Moss was... Oh, my God, yes. Moss built a stadium for fun. For fun. Who does that? Who the hell says, no, we'll get the team. I'll build a stadium in Fort Lauderdale for now until we can build a really good one. And he's building it all. There's no public money involved. Okay? They might be providing the land, but brother, he's building everything. The Moss brothers are maniacs, dude. They want to win. I keep telling you guys, forget about everybody that starts a new business. More often than not, most of us screw up a whole bunch when we start a new business. This is new to them, owning a sports team and owning a soccer team. They made a shit ton of mistakes at the beginning, but I saw it in front of my eyes. The dedication is there. They're not cheap, bro. They're not going to cut corners. So if they owned the Marlins, they wouldn't have traded away all those players. They would have kept some of those guys, and then they would have built on top of all of that. And you would have way better crowds in that place if the Moss brothers owned. Hell yeah, please, dude. Yes. Yes. I mean, I don't know how people don't believe in those guys. It's like, you know, people are questioning, oh, well, will they win in soccer? Hell yeah, dude. They're going to win. Jorge Mas is not buying this to lose, man. And look, it's going in the right direction. They'll be fine. And if they get Messi, brother, if he's willing to bring Messi here, then he'll do anything in baseball. He's the guy that would probably steal Ohtani from the Angels. Not this guy, but Jorge Mas might do that. Yeah, no, I have all the faith in the Moss brothers, okay? I don't care about what happened with Onside and all that crap. That didn't work out, whatever. Who cares? I don't give a shit about that. You got to compartmentalize things. One doesn't affect the other, okay? They will win. They will win big in soccer, and if they own the baseball team, there would be a lot more baseball fans in town if the Moss brothers owned the baseball team. No doubt in my mind. So, what else? Kyrie has never made the playoffs when he doesn't have KD or LeBron. Yeah, of course, because he's a jag. He's a punk. He's just got a lot of talent, but that doesn't make you a great player. That's the problem. Who's my favorite member of Genesis? I'm going with Phil Collins for sure. Yeah, I like Tony Banks and Rutherford. But no, I'm going Phil Collins. I'm not going Peter Gabriel. I'm not as big on the Genesis Gabriel stuff. It's all right, but I don't go gaga over it. I don't go crazy over it. It's all right. It's psychedelic. It's a little too out there for me sometimes, to be quite honest. I'm not that big on early Genesis. It's all right. It's not terrible, but it's all right. I'd rather listen to Peter Gabriel solo 100,000 times over than his stuff with Genesis. So I'm going Phil Collins. Yeah. Put it this way. I enjoy early Journey more than I enjoy early Genesis. I enjoy early Fleetwood Mac over early Genesis. There we go. In comparisons. Some of those bands that made monster changes once they added Stephen Perry, once they added Nix and Buckingham, you know, the Peter Green era. I'd rather listen to early Fleetwood Mac and early Journey way over early Genesis. Okay? Like, it's not even close. So that I'm a little biased, I guess, when it comes to early Genesis. I'm not really like this major fan of it. I'm really not that impressed with it. It's Phil Collins' Genesis is, my God. In fact, maybe when I go home, I'm going to jam. On my way home, I'll jam a little Three Sides Live. What a great album that is. Oh, my God. So phenomenal. So phenomenal. All right, let's take a break. Hour number three of the Big O Radio Show live from the place where they're giving away a Mercedes-Benz on April Fool's Day. And it's not an April Fool's. It's the real deal. We're giving away a Mercedes on April Fool's Day. All right. Hopefully Alan Poupart will join us in hour number three right here on the Big O Radio Show.